I'm Thomas Rinn. I'm leading the Global Industrial Practice at Accenture. Welcome, Michael Traub, the CEO of STIHL, to this interview for the industrialists. Thanks for having us here with you at STIHL.
Great being here together with you, Thomas, and look forward to our conversation.
Michael, just give me one word that describes you best.
If you look at it from a professional point of view, probably the word persistence would describe me best, like never giving up, always trying harder, always trying new things, being very curious.
So it's still is a family-owned business. How do adaptability and resilience go together? Is it like looking at the speed of transformation needed? Is it an advantage to be a family-owned business, or is it a disadvantage? How do you deal with that?
The key differentiator, and that's the way I look at STIHL, is really that I believe we understand our customers, our consumers, our end users better than many, better than anyone else, I would even say, in our industry, in the auto power industry. We were founded in 1926 by Andreas STIHL in Stuttgart. It's a small little engineering shop, and he invented the two-man chainsaw. So we actually are the ones kind of bringing the saw to the tree and not the tree to the saw, which we're very proud of. From a two-man, it went into a one-man chainsaw. And from there, we developed our whole product portfolio. Why am I telling you that? I do believe that experience matters, especially in an industry that goes through transformation. It is super important that you understand what your customers need, what your end users need. And we have a lot of experience, especially that STIHL is what it is today, just because of that. Another important aspect of that is that the STIHL family, in the second generation, Hans-Peter STIHL, very famous businessman in Germany, not only because the fact that he is really the driving force behind the growth of STIHL, but also political power. He worked a lot as an entrepreneur as well, bringing industrial interests into German policy making. And he decided in 2002 that the family will withdraw from management and will only be in the advisory board. And why is that important? So very early in that growth scenario, they recognized that they need professional experience, professional help in order to take the company to the next generation. So literally, since more than 20 years, it's external management. And I'm the fifth CEO of STIHL since its founding in 1926. And my predecessor was in the role for 20 years. So we have now a very experienced cooperation between the family, external management, and our external board that supports us in strategy making. So therefore, I believe that the family is actually a big advantage for what we're doing and going through that transformation.
It sounds a bit like you want to be CEO for the next 20, 25 years, which is an absolutely great signal, Michael, because you have introduced the target that in, I think, 2035, you want to have 80% battery powered equipment out there, products out there. Looking at what's happening in the industry, at the dynamics on at the COVID special cycle you were in and all that stuff, this 95 years heritage overall at the end, doesn't it slow down? Is it further accelerating? Is it helping you to achieve this target? Or how would you look at this?
One of my first roles and utmost targets and tasks at STIHL is really to take STIHL from that 800-pound gorilla in the gas-powered auto power business to have the same role in the battery-powered auto power equipment. And that is a huge task, right? Imagine the company is proudly the world market leader in petrol power chainsaw since 1973. And we know that that transformation is real and that transformation will happen with or without us. So when I started after 1 year and you were part of that and were supporting us on that journey, we said to them, what's that rally cry? What is that one thing that everyone should remember when they wake up in the morning? And our rally cry really is battery first. And battery first is not that we do battery only. We have said right from the beginning, we have the ambition to be a dual technology leader, but we know that we have to build that muscle of battery powered outdoor power equipment. So therefore battery first in a context of dual technological leadership. And my crystal ball is not better than yours, right? Is it 80%? Is it 70%? Nobody knows. But what we know is the world will be changing a lot till 2035, and we have to be ready. We cannot be stale. We cannot be sitting on our laurels and wait for the change to happen. We have to actively be the driver of that change. And therefore, 80%. And we already today, we increased our battery share from 20 to 24% last year. We want to be at 35% in 2027. And we believe it will be dramatically accelerating in the 30s, especially when private consumers and as well professionals will lean more and more on battery powered equipment.
And it seems like this only works if the CEO is the front runner of this transformation. Is that correct?
Well, you have to be obsessed about something, right? It's kind of, if you don't stand behind and give people doubt, they will not go with you through that transformation. It's hard. If you're really successful, if you have a company that has been doing things right for the last 97, 98 years, to tell them to do something else needs conviction. And I think obsession, it might be even the right word, to take people and our customers on that journey. I mean, our retail customers on that journey, to make them understand that there's no way back. And we have to change because it's a macro environment that is the driver behind all that.
Your products are running without being digital since years. They just go on and go on. And that's the quality where Stihl is, that Stihl is famous for, honestly. But if you have such a product, how do you prepare such an organization for the digital age? How do you get the folks prepared?
I know that this is one of the tasks we've been talking a lot about, Thomas, and it's not easy. We are a mechanical engineering company at heart. We have a very high manufacturing depth, and we believe we make the best equipment in the outdoor power industry from a mechanical engineering point of view. What our customers told us what they want is what we added on. So we have a program called Stihl Connected, where you have a digital device attached to a chainsaw, attached to a brush cutter, attached to a blower and other equipment we have, where our users, especially imagine your municipality or your big professional landscaper in the US, and you have 150 of our equipment, you can see at any point in time at what operating status you're in. You can see at any point in time the geolocation, whether it was stolen, whether the guy is really working or taking a break. And you can see obviously as well when the machine needs maintenance. So the predictive maintenance issue is a very important task for our customers, because most of our customers are professional. And if the equipment doesn't run, they don't make money. So we increase the productivity of our great products by adding connected features. And that's a very tangible, real benefit we offer in the marketplace since a couple of years now. And we're only at the beginning of that. The system has a long way to go. And on the other hand, we're also in the robotic lawn mowing business. And the interesting thing about that business is that the hardware, the mower itself, is one part of the success story. But we have in the meantime 100, even more than 100 software engineers that do nothing else, that build the app, that build the software features in order to have that robotic lawnmower work. And on top of that, we have many, many more outside software companies helping us with specific issues to make that work. So it has changed a lot. And also our profile of engineers has changed a lot, where in the past we only had mechanical engineers. We have now, when I look around the building, at least 30% of our engineers are software specialists or are on the verge of being able to connect software and hardware together.
Listening to you, Michael, it sounds like you have a couple of transformations in parallel. The one you were just talking about, the capability transformation. So your people need to do something different on the one side. Then you have the technology transformation from gasoline or combust to battery. Then you have a digital transformation looking at speed. So that you have a product transformation, also getting new digital services into the topic. And what we have not talked about, you also have a shop floor transformation where all of your factories need to become more digital. What role does digitization play on the shop floor at the moment for you?
Digitization has been a key issue since I started here. And even before I started, and that's the way how you and I met, we started the program One Steel. One Steel is our digital transformation of our systems and processes. It is mainly documented as a transformation of our SAP system to SAP S/4HANA, but that's one thing. What it really is, it's a transformation of systems and processes. We have 7 factories globally, we have 42 sales subsidiaries, and Steel grew very fast and very organically and very decentralized. So the digitization of having one ERP system worldwide, One Steel, that's what it stands for, to do the same things globally the same way and have build it on the same database and the same data structure sounds like, oh yeah, you guys should have that, and it's obvious you should have that, but it was not as obvious for us. So really the digitization of the ERP, or kind of getting into the best practice standard of ERP systems, is a key initiative that we're driving together with the help and the lead implementation partner, who is Accenture. On the other hand, shop floor digitization means as well that we have, since a number of years, obviously, robots that help our employees be more effective. We have digital tools with cameras that do quality control instead of human inspection in line more and more with AI generated support as well. And we have in the meantime now as well more and more digital evaluation of our processes, especially when it comes to our printing processes, which we no longer do analog, but we have a digital print shop now, which is a huge progress for us, especially when it comes to customization for our customers and speed of execution. So it's various fields, and they're all not equally in terms of importance, but we drive a lot of different experiments to very solid implementations around the world.
Listening to you carefully, there are a couple of use cases that you have in your mind looking at AI and Gen AI and all these topics that Steel is already approaching, correct?
That is correct, Thomas, but to be perfectly candid, when I look at Gen AI, and I've been obviously since ChatGPT made AI visible to everyone, I get asked every day, what are you doing in Gen AI? What are you doing? Where are you? And to be perfectly candid, it's a journey. And yeah, we use AI obviously in quality control. We use AI in analytics. We use AI in our chatbots in our customer service. We have a chatbot called Benny that answers our customers their questions they have around Steel. And also here, some are very logical next steps and some are very out there experiments. So I believe we wanna still be in the forefront, try a lot of new things. But one thing is clear, AI is here to stay, and we will learn a lot, and we have dedicated resources to integrate that fully into our manufacturing and engineering processes as well. There's definitely more to come. But I'm saying that I hear a lot of hype around AI, and a lot of people really use AI for something that's not AI and something that we had for a long time. So I think we need to differentiate very carefully that we don't get just lost in buzzwords here.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So again, summarizing, Michael, you are the CEO of a great brand, a very proud and famous company, transformation everywhere. What really gets you excited about what you're doing at the moment?
I personally feel very honored that I have the chance to be in the role as a CEO during such a period of transformation. When you look at the history of steel in the close to 100 years, I believe it's really the biggest change in technology that we're going through. When you look at our first combustion engine, it's a technology that we have perfected in many, many decades. And therefore, we feel we're the best at what we're doing. But now it's a new drivetrain. It's battery driven. It's electric. It's new to us. And we come from that role as a clear market leader, undisputed market leader, suddenly in the role as a challenger. And that requires a totally different mindset. And as I said in the beginning, I believe the persistence that I have, the tenacity that I have, and that curiosity that I have helps me, you know, say, look, this is really great stuff. This is something which people, when they look back in 10 years from now, will look at that period of mid-20s at steel as a very decisive period on how we got steel on that journey into an electrified world. And that's really a huge motivation for me and the team. And I hope to inspire as well many folks here at steel with that passion.
Thank you for the great collaboration. And listening to you makes me feel, wow, steel is moving forward at the right speed. Thanks so much for this interview.
Thank you so much.